Chicken or beef?
Beef, please.
Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fibre at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fibre, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fibre. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fibre from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Welcome to the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Dominic Collett today, who heads up the new Alpha Code FinTech. What do you call it? An incubator?
We call it a club.
A club, okay. But there's investment going on here. There's lots of meetings, lots of entrepreneurs, startups, etc. In this environment, we're sitting on the third floor. Is this the R&B building in Sandton?
It's part of the Rand Merchant Complex, mm-hmm. but we're in 2 Merchant Place, so it's a bit of an independent building.
Oh, right. Okay. Now, you work for Rand Merchant Investments, is that right?
That's correct.
Now, that's a subsidiary of RMBH?
No, it's the ultimate holding company. So we've got 2 holding companies, and Rand Merchant Investments is the holding company for Discovery, for Outsurance, for MMI, and our sister holding company is Rand Merchant Bank Holdings, which is the holding company for First Rand.
Oh, right. Okay. And then under First Rand, of course, you've got entities like First National Bank, etc.
That's correct.
So there's 2 holding entities that sit next to each other.
That's correct.
Okay, fascinating. Well, tell me a bit more about RMI. I know RMB. I think everyone knows what RMB is and what they do. But RMI, perhaps a little bit of a lesser known entity. Tell me a bit about what they do.
Sure. So RMI, as I said, is an investment holding company. So what RMI does is that it sits on top of these big organizations. And really what we are is portfolio managers. So we've got a threefold mandate, which is to optimize, to diversify, and to modernize. So on the optimize side, we work with our underlying portfolio companies, being Outsurance, being Discovery, being MMI, and First Rand, to think about big strategic issues, things like capital allocation, things like management incentive plans, big strategies for the businesses. We certainly don't get operationally involved because the culture of this group of companies is very much owner-managed. We work as strategic sounding boards. On the diversify side, we're looking to diversify offshore, and we also look to diversify into new asset classes. And then the big part of the portfolio, which I'm very excited about, is to modernize. How do we take this large group of companies and how do we take this entire group into the future?
Okay, and that's where the fintech side of things comes in. And obviously fintech has been a huge buzzword over the last, 18 months or so.
Yes.
I guess what RMI is doing here with Alpha Code is looking for those next big businesses that are going to transform the financial services space, the startups that I guess you hear a lot about, the big banks being worried that these companies are going to disintermediate or come up with really innovative ideas that are going to throw their business models out of the window. You're really looking for those companies that are going to do that and invest in them and grow them and potentially build the next Discovery, for example.
That's exactly it. I mean, I think the history of our group is that we are an innovative group. You know, this group of companies was founded by 3 very strong entrepreneurs in the 70s, and it's got a long history of backing entrepreneurs, of identifying very strong people who've got very strong business models and supporting those entrepreneurs, people like Adrian Gore, people like Phil Amoris from Outsurance, to help them re-engineer the financial services landscape. So that's really what this group is all about. And what we've identified is that the landscape of financial services is changing because of 3 things. We've got a millennial generation that's coming up who fundamentally interact with financial services in a different way. Mm. We've got the rise of social media, which is changing how people relate to their world. And we've got technology, which is a driving force. And the melting pot of these 3 things is going to change financial services as we know it. So our view is we'd rather be part of that change and we'd rather disrupt ourselves than be disrupted.
Okay, so amazing numbers I was looking at here. You've got over 1,000 members of Alpha Code already. When was it established?
So we actually launched in September 2015.
Okay.
And the whole idea behind it was that we said, if we want to be part of this future, we need to think about how best to do it. Mm. So when we were setting it up, we looked at various models. We looked at incubators, we looked at accelerators, and we thought, do we do the innovation inside our portfolio companies or do we do it externally? And that's how the idea of the club came together. So the reason we've called it a club is because a club is where you go to meet like-minded people. So if, for example, you're a runner and you want to get better at running, you generally join a running club. Yep. You meet people who have a similar interest, and you generally improve your running because you're doing races together. So the idea of AlphaCode is to bring these entrepreneurs together and to also expose them to the intrapreneurs which are sitting within our organizations, because we believe that the future of financial services is going to come from that amalgamation of next generation thinking combined with some deep experience from the financial services world. So it's a combination of entrepreneurs, intrapreneurs, and thought leaders in the space. So it's a place where people can come and meet, they can connect, they can build their businesses, they can grow, they can challenge their businesses, and it's also open to the industry. That's a very important philosophy of AlphaCode.
You've got very nice offices here and a nice working space. I believe a lot of the space is for hot desking and people who happen to be in, your startups happen to be in Sandton and they need a space to work or to meet. But you've got various tiers of membership here, and the basic tier, I understand, is completely free of charge. What does that give you if you go for that tier?
So what we do is we've got the first level is green membership, which is anyone who's interested in fintech or is interested in this future of financial services. So this could be lawyers who are interested in it. It could be people working in digital design agencies. It could also be people who are just sitting in banks exist currently who are thinking about this future world. They can join AlphaCode. It's completely free of charge, and then they become part of our ecosystem. They get our monthly newsletter. They're obviously part of our social media pages. They also get invited to certain events that we have that are open to the public. So that's our first engagement, because we want to draw as many people as we can into this world to help them start thinking about the future.
And who typically are joining at that tier?
So we've got a very wide range. As I said, we've got lawyers, we've got digital designers, we've got bankers, we've got a sort of a very broad mix. We've got journalists, we've got a lot of people who are thinking about this.
Mm. Okay. And next tier's up?
The next tier up is gold membership. So once you've actually founded a financial services business, once you've actually made that plunge into full-time entrepreneurship, so that's our most important criteria, is that you have to be a full-time entrepreneur. And you've actually come up with what we think is a very innovative idea, and we've kind of gone through the assessment process, and we think that you are building something that's interesting, we invite you in as a gold member. Again, it's free of charge. Your only requirement for membership is that we've got to believe that you're doing something worthwhile. And if you're a gold member, there's a lot of benefits to being a gold member. First of all, you get access to our beautiful space, which we really are very proud of, which means that you've got a great hot desking area, you've got free meeting rooms, and most importantly, you get introduced to other gold members. And often these businesses can work better together and build greater businesses. We also have very special VIP events where we introduce them to some of our great entrepreneurs within the group. We also introduce them to external experts, and we have these wonderful networking events where we can really challenge the thinking.
Okay, and then you've got a tier specifically aimed at black-owned startups in this space. Tell me a bit about that tier.
That's an initiative that we're really excited about and very proud of, because we believe very strongly in building the next generation of black financial services businesses. So we've got a partnership currently with Bank of America Merrill Lynch, where they channel all of their enterprise development spend through us. So what we do is we put a call out to black businesses in the financial services space or in the technology space. They apply and we assess their business plan, so they then get invited to a pitch evening. And out of that pitch evening, each year we choose four businesses and they get awarded R1 million each in terms of helping develop and grow their business. And we've got a big focus on those platinum member businesses. They get given permanent office space at AlphaCode, and they get access to time, they get access to mentorship, and we really help build those businesses up.
So do you take an equity stake in those businesses in return for that investment?
No, we don't. That is literally grant funding. And wow. I think that's what's really exciting about it, is it's no strings attached grant funding that comes from Bank of America Merrill Lynch, and it also comes with a lot of support from BAML.
Okay, wow, that's amazing. So the Bank of America Merrill Lynch, do they have executives who coach these guys, who provide advice? I presume you're providing advice to them on the RMI side of things, but does Bank of America also get involved from that perspective?
Yes, so we're actually structuring that mentorship program, because obviously there's people within the BAML organization who can provide a lot of input around legal, around regulatory, and they're very keen to get involved in these businesses. So it's a wonderful program from that perspective, and it's been running for 2 years now.
Okay, and how much... How many companies have you invested in so far, and what are some of the notable success stories that have come out of that particular tier?
We've actually had 9 platinum members in that, so we've granted 9 million rand of funding.
Okay.
Probably one of our most successful stories there is a company called Azazi, which is a data analytics business. It's run by 4 highly smart individuals who've got, I think between them, they've got about 10 PhDs, wow. And they are doing advanced machine learning analytics. And they took the million rand that we had given them, and they managed to develop 2 new products out of it, which has taken their business to a new level. So they really developed a very high ROI on the investment that we gave them.
That sounds interesting. What is their name?
Azazi.
I-Z?
I-S-A-Z-I.
A-Z-I. Sounds fascinating. I think
and to me, why that story was so exciting is that when we hear about machine learning, when we hear about data analytics, and we hear about these things, we think it's happening far away in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And here is a homegrown data analytics business which can compete with the best in the world.
Okay, so what are these products that they've developed? What do they do exactly?
So they go into companies and they develop, they will analyze what a company is doing with their data, and they'll develop bespoke products for that company. So they've done various things from the financial services industry to the gaming industry, to the construction industry, and each one is bespoke, but they're now trying to develop some generic products which can be applied across industries.
Okay, so they've been working, they've been designing bespoke solutions so far, but they're going to be developing packages that they could reuse and resell.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then you've got a diamond membership tier as well. That's the
yes.
top tier, is it? What does that entail?
So the purpose of AlphaCode is obviously twofold. The one is to bring innovation into our portfolio companies. So a lot of the gold members are working with the likes of Discovery and OutSurance and F&B to do pilots and proof of concepts and to bring innovative thinking into those businesses. And that is something that we're very excited about. Then there are certain businesses that we think could be the next Discovery or could be the next OutSurance and do need independence, and that they're going to grow through applying growth capital. The first business that we've invested in there is a business called Merchant Capital, which provides SME finance. They've got a very interesting distribution model. It's an incredibly powerful team. They're young, they're hungry, they're aggressive. They're very good strategic thinkers. So that was a business that RMI invested in order to grow independently. So that's what the platinum membership is about. I mean, the diamond membership is about. It's about finding those businesses that we think have to grow independently and that can't grow within a portfolio company itself.
Okay, so RMI takes investments in those businesses. How many investments have you made to date?
We've made 1 to date,
okay.
And we are in the process of closing another one, and this year we should see more.
Okay.
We are quite cautious in that space. You know, fintech has been a big buzzword, and there's been a lot of businesses that have been developing in South Africa. The state of fintech in South Africa is still quite nascent, and we feel there's a lot of businesses that have to work a little bit harder to get to the stage that they're ready for a growth capital investor like RMI. Because once we come in, we do devote a lot of time, a lot of attention, and we do demand a lot of the business.
Yes. Okay. I mean, do you think there's been a lot of buzz around fintech in the last 18 months? Do you think it's been overhyped in the South African market and even for that matter in the global market?
I think in some ways it has been. I think what people underestimate is how long it can take to build a fintech business.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially if you're trying to, I think often fintechs need a partnership with a bank or an insurance company to actually grow and to develop and to scale.
Mm.
The lead times in terms of developing those partnerships are incredibly long. They're very difficult to negotiate. They're highly complicated. And I think what we see a lot in this market is often a business has a great product and has great technology, but doesn't necessarily have a great business case.
Oh.
And that's what we are trying to push very hard, is that the entrepreneurs really need to think about the business side of the business as opposed to just the pure product.
Mm.
Because fintech is exactly that. It's financial services and it's technology. And we see a lot of businesses just focusing on the technology.
Mm. Do you think, I mean, I talk to a lot of financial services companies and a lot of startups in the space as well. And one complaint I hear a lot is that this is a very regulated market. There's a lot of regulatory hoops that companies need to jump through. In fact, I was chatting to one of your members a couple of weeks ago, iCorka, who do a mobile point of sale terminal, and they've said they've come up directly against the regulatory environment here in South Africa. How much of a barrier is it, do you think, to the development of the fintech industry?
So, you know, to understand, First of all, South Africa's got a phenomenal regulatory framework. We're one of the best regulated industries in the world, and it's something that we're very proud of. What people don't realize is that the South African banking market is one of the most advanced in the world.
Right.
We are far more advanced than the US market. To give you an example, in the US, checks are still very commonplace.
Oh, well, that always amazes me.
So I think people have to respect that we've got an incredibly well-regulated market. It's what insulated us from the global financial crisis. And there's this tension between opening up the market and protecting what we have. Now, we've seen markets like the UK and we've seen markets like Singapore, where the regulator has taken a very deliberate approach to enable the environments of fintech. They've created regulatory sandboxes where they've allowed companies to come into the sandbox and they've granted special licenses. The thing is, in markets, particularly like the UK, the depth of banking talent and the depth of experience is very deep. Mm. We don't have that in South Africa at this point in time. So I'm not sure it would be wise for the regulator to open up the market too widely at this point in time. I think our entrepreneurs need to get to the next level of maturity for that to happen.
Right.
So I think it's a very careful balance. Mm. I think the engagements with the South African Reserve Bank, a lot of our members have engaged with them. The South African Reserve Bank is certainly open to understanding this, is certainly applying their mind to it. For example, if we look at one thing around Bitcoin and blockchain, we've been amazed at how open the South African Reserve Bank has been to that and has been engaging on it thoroughly. Mm. But it is a road and it has to be traveled. And it is just one of the realities. If you are a fintech company and you want to be successful, you have to understand this environment because you're dealing with people's money. Mm. And I think that's what people don't always appreciate, is that you cannot circumvent those things because it's about trust. And ultimately, you're dealing with a nurse's bank account,
right,
or you're dealing with a cashier's pension, and it's a big responsibility that you're taking on.
Mm. I want to come back and talk a little bit about blockchain and Bitcoin, because that's obviously another big buzzword certainly of 2016, and I guess going into this year as well. But the South African market is in global terms is a small market. We've mentioned companies like Discovery, for example, but they really are focused on the South African market. Is the fintech opportunity here, do you think, South Africa, or is it more broad than that? Is it? We're in an interesting position in South Africa in that we've got elements of both a developed and a developing world economy. Is the opportunity here to build solutions that will work across the developing world, or are you finding that most of the entrepreneurs who come in here and the startups that are working through Alpha Code are focusing exclusively on the South African market?
So I think the advice that I always give to fintech startups is, if you can't prove yourself and scale in the home market, you're not ready to play externally.
Okay.
Our founders always say this, is the minute you want to go into an external market, you need to be able to send your A team. And I think scaling too quickly and trying to expand internationally too soon is often the downfall of many of the businesses. Mm-hmm. Yes, the South African market is quite small, but again, it's very deep. Our financial services industry is very well developed and it's very deep. We've got very large organizations. There is a lot of opportunity here. The minute you start moving into other markets, whether it's the US or the UK or Australia, which is what I see a lot of our fintech companies trying to do, you've got to realize what competition you're coming up against. Mm. Those markets are fiercely competitive. You don't have the trust factor that you have in South Africa, and you don't have the networks. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very difficult. It's about learning to crawl before you walk. And I get quite nervous when I see businesses expanding too quickly, because I think you've got to be able to prove yourself here first before you can prove yourself on the international stage.
Sure.
The benefits of the South African market is because it is such a well-regulated market and because it is so advanced, the solutions that you develop here will be applicable to a lot of other markets.
And developing markets in particular, I'm thinking that, we've seen the impact that M-Pesa, for example, has had in Kenya, which was a massively underbanked market. It hasn't really had much of an impact in South Africa, and Vodacom pulled the plug on it. But, one of the areas that fintech is seen as tackling is financial inclusion and getting the lower LSMs into the system. Is there an opportunity? I know that European and American markets are incredibly competitive, but is there an opportunity for South African fintech startups to, specifically focusing on that broad financial inclusion space, to build significant businesses in the African context?
So I think there is a big opportunity from a financial inclusion perspective, and I think that is what technology enables. It allows you to move the frontiers of financial services because it lowers the cost of providing financial services. Mm. I think the challenges in the other African markets is that each market you go into has its own dynamics.
Sure.
And if you are going to go into whether it's Kenya, whether it's Nigeria, whether it's Ghana, you need to understand the dynamics of that market. You need to understand your consumer behavior. You need to understand your family relationships. You need to understand the economics, because each implementation is going to have to be highly modified for that market. And that is often very difficult for companies to do. So yes, there's a massive opportunity to apply the technology. But like we saw with M-Pesa, M-Pesa worked very well in Kenya for very specific reasons. If you just do a copy and paste into another market without understanding the unique dynamics, it's never going to work. Financial services is one of those industries where it's highly dependent on the local market. And it's always best to get a very strong local partner who can help you navigate that.
Mm, okay. Now, the financial services, let's call it the corporate financial services space in South Africa, is very well developed and established, and they're fantastic skills in these organizations. They've got big IT teams. They're very well resourced. And one of the criticisms I've heard of the South African space, particularly from those involved in the startup community, is that the big corporates tend to suck up all the talent. So the guys will come out of university and they'll go immediately and work for a big corporate. Whereas in other markets, like the States, for example, or Israel is a good example, I guess, many markets in Western Europe, you'll find that guys will finish university and they'll join a startup. But here they tend to go into corporate. If there is a talented startup, they tend to quickly be bought up by one of the big corporates because they see a potential threat to their business. Do you find that the strength of the corporate landscape in South Africa in this particular space is an impediment to the startup community, or do you think it helps?
I don't think it's a function of the corporate landscape. I think it's the function of the ecosystem and the funding landscape. You've got to understand the South African entrepreneurial ecosystem is very immature, and it's quite flawed and it's quite broken at the moment. And the reason for that is we don't have efficient funding. Mm. So if you go into the US or if you go into Israel, what you'll see is that there's very clear paths to funding. So you've got very well established angel funders, Series A, Series B, Series C, and you've got funds that have the mandate to invest into that. So as a startup, you know the clear path that you can follow. So you get your angel, you get your Series A, you get your Series B. So you continually fund it through that, which means that you can attract the talent. Mm. Now, because the ecosystem in South Africa is quite fragmented and quite broken at the moment, you just don't have those clear paths to funding at this point in time, which makes it difficult for a startup, no matter how successful they are, to attract the talent. So at the moment, especially in the fintech space, you do need some strong financial services skills, and they're expensive.
Yes.
We also don't have the same level of support system that you have in other markets. So if, for example, you're in the UK or you're in the US, if you fail in a startup, there's often a lot of systems that you can fall back on. Mm-hmm. You've got a very deep job market. You don't have the same dynamics of supporting massive families back home, so you can take the risk. In the South African landscape, we don't have that. We don't have that big safety net that a lot of people have in other markets. So there's a lot of dynamics around the South African system which need to be fixed before we're going to get there.
I suppose Alpha Club is going some way in helping to address that that situation. But what more do you think can be done, at least in the short to medium term, to try and fix that?
So I think a lot of it, especially in the fintech space, I think this is where often for a business to be successful in the financial services space, it does need the backing of a big financial services business. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, for example, we see the RMI mandate is very exciting, because we understand the importance of having a business that's incubated outside of a large business. Mm. You need to understand that a small business operates very differently to a big business. And an entrepreneur, a true entrepreneur, doesn't want to be an employee. Mm. So you've got to create the enabling environment for that, and you've got to apply independent independent growth capital to allow that business to thrive. You've also got to understand that people aren't going to be able to meet budgets regularly, that it's going to take a lot longer than what it would normally take. And a lot of the large financial services institutions currently are on that journey. They have a lot of things that they've got to wrap their head around, but it's going to take a little while to get there. Mm. So our example of Merchant Capital is a perfect example of how we said, in an ideal world, this is the sort of business that should be sitting within F&B because it is providing SME finance. But we understood that that innovation is only going to thrive if it's sitting outside of the business because of the nature of those entrepreneurs. So then you've got to take the bold leap and you've got to say, I'm willing to fund this business independently. And I think the more that financial services institutions who have the funding available are prepared to do that, the more developed this ecosystem is going to become.
Okay. Good. We were chatting just before we started recording this this show that Discovery is coming to market this year with what will be a digital-led bank. How do you see that shaking up this market? I mean, I was chatting to the CEO of a company called Curve Group last week, who was telling me that the banking space in South Africa is ripe for a big shakeup because of the legacy banks have big cost bases, particularly in technology infrastructure. They're sitting on legacy IT infrastructure that they're having to service at huge cost, which means the average cost of serving a customer in those banks is high and is waiting to be disrupted by someone who's going to come along with a low-cost digital-led model could potentially upend the market. Do you see that happening? Do you think that Discovery could be one of those institutions that that really causes a major shakeup in this market? And do you think the it's called them the legacy banks, if you like, are in a bit of trouble?
Well, given that we are the largest shareholder in Discovery, we certainly believe that Discovery Bank is going to shake up the landscape. And we are very supportive of the strategy. But I think, you know, the reason why we think this digital banking trend is going to take off is for two reasons. The first one is the cost base, is that these new age banks, and we've seen this happen in the US and the UK with these challenger banks, is that technology is enabling banks to get to the market at a fraction of the cost of what it used to cost.
Right.
And that is going to fundamentally change the landscape. So that's the one lever that is at play. Someone who can bring an offering to the market at a tenth of what the banks are currently doing at is already at a massive advantage. But there's a second thing that is even more powerful, which is around the customer experience and the customer value proposition. The current banks, and this is not just a South African thing, this is globally, still look and feel like banks.
Yes.
So their digital offerings that they're trying to put on the front of their banking products are really just that. They're trying to sort of put a pretty face on something that still looks and feels like a bank. Mm-hmm. Whereas the millennial generation are really looking for an experience. They have an experience like Uber, which is instant, which is something that solves a real need. Mm. And that's where the real opportunity lies, is to offer products to the market that solve a real customer need and doesn't fill the bank's intentions of trying to maximize P&L. Mm. So I think where players like Discovery, who don't think like a bank and don't come in with that bank legacy with, you know, existing products and existing P&Ls, really can make a difference because they can deliver a customer value proposition that is fundamentally different. And we've seen that in the UK, where you've had these big challenger banks come into the market and they're offering phenomenal customer experiences that don't necessarily look and feel like a bank. And that is what people are gravitating towards.
So the banking that that maybe you and I grew up with, or certainly our parents grew up with, is not going to it's going to be something completely different in the future. I mean, the concept of a branch is kind of dead to people in their 20s, isn't it?
Completely. I mean, no one in their 20s wants to visit a branch. No one in their 20s wants to necessarily phone into a call center. Mm. They live and die by their smartphones.
Yeah.
The smartphone is one of the most phenomenal opportunities for financial services because you can deliver the most phenomenal experience through a device that's held in the hand. Mm. And that allows a much richer experience of a bank than anything that a branch would allow. And I think if you understand how to use that device, if you understand how to use that interface, you can really lock in the customer and you can engage that customer.
Does it lower the barriers to entry as well? I mean, certainly in the media industry, which I'm part of, we've seen how the internet has transformed the business, made it very easy for anyone to launch a media. All you need to do is put up a website and you've got an outlet. Do you think that, I know it's a heavily regulated industry and it's not going to be as simple as that, but do you think that the internet and smartphones and technology more broadly are going to make the market much more competitive? I mean, we've historically had four big banks in South Africa. We've got five now, I guess, in the retail space. Do you think that that's going to mushroom in the next few years on the back of fintech?
I don't think it'll mushroom, but it certainly is going to enable new players to come into the market. I think the reality, though, is whether you're launching a digital bank, it is a much lower cost, but mm-hmm. there are still very high costs associated with it when it comes to engaging a customer. For example, people don't realize how much money Uber has had to spend to attract the customers that it has. Mm. Any digital business is a very expensive business. Mm. It's easy to attract customers once you pay a lot of money on network marketing, but to keep those customers engaged costs an incredible amount of money. So yes, the technology enables you to get into the market, but to stay in the market and to build a sustainable business, you do need a lot of capital behind you. Mm. And we've seen that in the UK with those challenger banks. They've been able to get to the market on the back of venture capital, but to stay in the market and to be fully trusted by customers and to operate like a bank mm-hmm. and to manage the balance sheet behind them, they do need significant amounts of capital. And as a customer, I don't think anyone would want to bank with someone who wasn't well funded.
And I guess it's all about trust, no matter whether it's digital or not. This industry is about trust, and does the customer trust the institution he's putting his money into?
Exactly, and you can never underestimate that factor. Is that when it comes to your money, trust is always a very, very, very big factor, and particularly in a market like South Africa, where we do have an existing financial services industry.
Yes.
It's much easier in a market like Kenya, where there wasn't much for someone like M-Pesa to come in to offer an alternative, because there wasn't an alternative.
Is that the reason? Is it a trust issue that the mobile operators in South Africa failed to get into the space with their mobile payments offerings, or do you think something else was driving it? Was it our established financial services industry that put up barriers to entry, or what really drove the failure of M-Pesa and MTN's mobile money here?
So I think there were a number of factors at play. So I think the first one was understanding that. So in the case of M-Pesa, the offering that came out was incredibly limited. Mm-hmm. It was a very limited wallet offering that was closed loop. Mm-hmm. In South Africa, closed loop systems have not had much success because South African consumers are used to interoperable systems. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that, we are used to being able to send money to anyone.
Yes.
We are used to being able to send money from a Standard Bank to an Absa account. So to be stuck into a closed loop system was a very foreign concept. I think the second issue, particularly around M-Pesa, is they didn't solve the distribution problem. Is if you do not make it easy for people to get money in and to get money out, it becomes very difficult to use. The onboarding of the customer was also very complicated, so they hadn't necessarily looked at the FICA issues and to make that user experience very easy. And that is the thing, is when you're launching a financial services product, it's about, is the product the right fit? Do you have the correct distribution? Is it easy for the customer to use the product? And thirdly, is it a good customer experience? Are there significant barriers to entry to the customer signing up? And I think particularly in the case of M-Pesa, that was what led to its downfall. Mm. It hadn't thought about those issues.
Okay. Do you think there's an opportunity for the big mobile operators to come back into the space and compete? Or I mean, they seem to have retreated to lick their wounds. Do you think they're going to come back and have a play at this market, or do you think they've decided that this isn't really for us?
Listen, you don't want to discount anything. I mean, obviously, given the recent appointments at MTN and the fact that they've got some bankers in there, I wouldn't discount MTN coming back into the market. However, you also can't underestimate the trust level. You know, they've come into the market a few times; it hasn't worked particularly well. I think the South African Reserve Bank is also going to be very skeptical about people coming back into the market. This is a market where you can't come in and try out and pull out again. I wouldn't discount anything, but I think it's going to take a lot of convincing of people to come back in here and be successful.
Interesting. So AlphaCode put out a release, I guess, this week, looking at the major developments expected in the fintech space for 2017. And I was hoping, just as we wrap up this interview, maybe we could just touch on a couple of these. And you mentioned Bitcoin and blockchain. They were huge buzzwords last year.
Yes.
I watched the Bitcoin exchange rate with a great deal of interest as it shot up and then crashed again towards the end of last year. Bitcoin, here at AlphaCode, are there startups in this ecosystem that are looking at blockchain specifically, Bitcoin specifically, and what are they doing? And are we going to continue to ride the Bitcoin hype wave through this year as well?
So we do have a number of startups in AlphaCode that are looking at ways to use Bitcoin, to use blockchain, that are working with it. Mm-hmm. So it is alive and well in South Africa. Actually, as we speak, there is a Bitcoin and Blockchain Academy going on next door.
Okay.
So people are being trained on it. We are also seeing the financial services. So a lot of the banks are engaging on it to really understand it. So it's becoming a lot more mainstream in the banks. So they really starting to get their heads around what are the applications of Bitcoin and what are the applications of blockchain. So it's certainly something that's not going to, it wasn't just a hype of 2016. Mm. It's definitely going to be a continuing trend in 2017 and it's going to gain traction.
And then robo-advisors, this is a term I've heard quite a bit but don't know much about. It's got to do with artificial intelligence advising you on how you should invest your money, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
It sounds dangerous.
If executed badly, it will be very dangerous. So I think what's interesting about robo-advisors is that given the recent changes in the regulatory landscape around the retail distribution review and the fact that your brokers, the broker model is under pressure because of the way that the fees are going to be charged, existing savings and investments organizations are having to rethink how they distribute their product to customers, and they're having to rethink how they can get it at a lower cost. So I think that's where robo-advisors play a very big role. These products have very low margins. So I think robo-advisors that are standalone robo-advisors where they're trying to build up a new business are very difficult. We've seen the business models. We've seen, for example, companies in the UK like Nutmeg that have launched that are trying to do a standalone robo-advisor have really struggled because of the very thin margins. For me, the real opportunity in robo-advisors is the existing savings and investments organizations using it as a new digital channel. So as a new way to really speak to their customers. And I think that's what we're going to see more of this year, is the existing organizations getting their head around this channel and pushing it to their customers.
Okay. Are you seeing startups in this space as well? Or is it?
We're seeing a lot. We're seeing a lot of people looking at robo-advisors. We've got a number of pilots and proof of concepts that are going on with our portfolio companies working with the startups in AlphaCode. So it's an area that is very hot at the moment.
Interesting. Okay. So just lastly, as we wrap up, AlphaCode, what are your plans for this year broadly? And what are some of the, you've mentioned robo-advisors, but what are some of the other hot button areas that you're looking at? Where are you looking to direct some of your investment money this year?
So the area that we continue to be very interested is around SME financing. We think that the SME market is an incredibly important growth engine for the South African economy. We know that it's a topic of conversation that's happening globally, but we know that we need to get this SME market moving in South Africa. So we are very interested in alternative SME financing models. In fact, most of our platinum members that were awarded money last year are in that SME financing market and trying to bring greater transparency to the SMEs and to trying to unpack the financing model. So whether it's using data to provide a holistic view of financing, whether it's thinking about invoicing financing. So that's an area that we remain very, very, very interested in. As I said, we're also very interested in Bitcoin and blockchain and what the applications thereof are. So I think those are the trends that we're going to continue to focus on, along with digital banking, because we think that's a very big opportunity.
Excellent. Dominic Collett, head of AlphaCode, thanks for joining us on the Tech Central podcast.
Thank you for having me.